I'm Alan Thorpe.
And I'm David Rogers, and together we host the Weather Pod.
In this special series on artificial intelligence, we invite leading experts to reveal how AI is being used across all sectors of the global weather enterprise.
We want to find out how business, the public sector, and academia are using AI. Can it help improve the accuracy and quality of weather and climate information?
Can it help to make weather and climate information more useful and usable across a range of critical activities that are impacted by weather and climate?
There are many claims being made about AI, but what is its real value when it comes to helping business and society meet the growing climate challenge? The growing use of artificial intelligence in the field of weather prediction and forecasting is likely to have profound implications for national meteorological services in the coming years. In this fourth episode in our special WeatherPod series on AI, we've invited Dr. Alan Halley into the studio to examine how one Met service, MetIRON, is approaching the use of AI in its operations. Alan is the scientific lead in MetIRON's recently formed AI transformation team. This team's primary aim is to optimize the services MetIRON provides to Irish citizens through the targeted application of AI or machine learning technologies. During our discussion, we covered a number of key issues intimately connected to the use of AI-based weather forecasting systems. These range from the impact AI could have on the use of traditional NWP techniques, the organizational implications for national weather services of increasing use of AI, and the importance of working with weather-affected end users when it comes to developing decision support systems. While Alan has not worked specifically on AI in his career to date, it's absolutely clear from our conversation that this is an area where MetIRON sees enormous potential in its future operations. Welcome to the WeatherPod, Alan.
Yes, welcome, Alan. Great to have you on the program.
Thanks, David and Alan. Great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Alan, before we sort of delve into the AI transformation, which we're going to talk about in this episode, perhaps you could give our listeners and viewers a bit of a brief thumbnail sketch or overview of how MetIRON is structured and what kind of main functions does it have as the national Met Service for Ireland?
Sure. So MetIRON, similar to other national meteorological services, is divided along the pillars of infrastructure, services, research and governance. So our observations and technology teams are responsible for those items under infrastructure. So within the remit of the OBS team is the expansion and maintenance of our national observational network, including our national radar network. So at the moment, that's undergoing quite a large expansion. So from two radars at Dublin and Shannon Airport to hopefully a network of five radars across the country. They also have responsibility for Valentia Observatory in the southwest of the country, which has one of the oldest uninterrupted observational records of any synoptic station around the world. Our technology division then is responsibility for, of course, all of the traditional elements of IT infrastructure, but perhaps most notably our direct connections to the ECMWF supercomputer in Bologna, and also the links to our high-performance computer shared with our Danish, Dutch and Icelandic colleagues, which is housed near the Icelandic Met Service near Reykjavik. So this is a partnership called United Weather Centres West, and has been really one of the main focuses of MetIRON's work over the last 5 years. So we're pleased that we're finally getting towards operational service with that collaboration. Our three service divisions then are responsible for forecasting, flood forecasting and climate services. So our forecasting team, again, like other national Met services, are responsible for the issuance of warnings and forecasts and following the meteo alarm color coding warning system. They also manage the very successful storm naming agreement with the UK Met Office and KNMI, the Dutch National Met Service. Our flood team then are responsible for the issuance of coastal and fluvial flooding across the country, the issuance of warnings related to coastal and fluvial flooding. And they are in constant contact with local authorities and other state agencies when flooding is expected. And then our climate services team, they really provide a wide range of services to government and state agencies, perhaps most notably the recent publication of the Translate future climate scenarios data set. So this looks like, looks at rather, what Ireland will be under the different RCB scenarios. Our research and applications team then are developing and operationally running our high resolution short range NWP model, which is Harmony Arome. So again, up until very recently, this is something we did on our own, so solely a Medairn venture. But all of that is now done with our UWC West partners. So the development from research through to operations, that's now done with the Danish, Dutch and Icelandic colleagues. So we're particularly active in the areas of EPS research, model physics, particularly some aspects of cloud physics, some areas of model dynamics and data simulation as well. And this team also links then, so another consortium to bring into the picture, the Accord Consortium, which is a grouping of 26 countries across Europe, which is really focused on the development aspects of high-res NWP. And then, I suppose, in the context of today's conversation, one of the budding areas of collaboration is in the area of data-driven LAM. So we have a number of scientists working on specifically developing one of those for Ireland based off our regional reanalysis data set. And then finally, I suppose nothing is done without, business continuity and business operations division, which underpin everything. And most importantly, really, kind of our main liaisons to ECMWF, EU MedNet and EU MedSat.
Right, so I think some of our listeners would be quite interested in how the consortia are set up. So particularly on the one with Iceland and others, in terms of how that's supported financially, particularly, because we see in other parts of the world where we're working, like South Asia, there are opportunities to create consortia. They don't really exist at the moment, but it's a good model to follow. And so if you could just elaborate a little on how that's sort of the financial arrangements for that and how the partnership works in terms of the actual support for the computing resources.
Yeah, so each Met Service within the consortium has different areas of responsibility. So if I just take the Danish Met Service as the example here, so they're responsible for all of the technical aspects to do with the running of the HPC, 24/7 oversight if the HPC has an issue, and then contacting the operations teams, let's say the operational NWP team, to then come online or come on board and serve any or try and resolve any of the technical issues. Between Medairn and KNMI, then the Dutch National Met Service, they have responsibility for 24/7 cover for the NWP aspects. So if Harmony Arome has an issue overnight, there's someone in either Utrecht or in Dublin will come online and try and resolve those issues. And also during the day, obviously, if it can't be resolved overnight, there's a further team of people that can investigate other NWP issues. And then our Icelandic colleagues, that's where the HPC is housed. So they have quite a big responsibility there in ensuring the data connectivity. So, obviously we rely on boundary conditions from the IFS. So they have to ensure that the data connectivity is good between Iceland and the ECMWF. And also for disseminating the data back to the other three services. So they have quite a large responsibility when it comes to that.
For many organisations, technological development is key to the future. Owen Moran, your director of MetIron, has talked about how this will shape meteorological and hydrological services for years to come. So, how do you think AI could transform the various areas of MetIron's work that you've outlined already for us?
Yeah, so we could probably fill the rest of the podcast talking about all of the various areas, but just to pick one or two examples. So we have a network of upwards of 400 rainfall stations, mostly volunteer rainfall observers across the country. So they send in their observations every day into Medairn, and then obviously this needs to be quality controlled, quality assured, before it can be used in any downstream products. But that's quite a cumbersome process at the moment, as a lot of that is done manually. So one project we have underway is leveraging machine learning techniques to do a lot of that in a more near real-time setting, Because then one of the main products you get out of quality controlling and quality assuring those more quickly is a gridded rainfall analysis. And, you know, our service divisions are obviously very interested in that, particularly our flood forecasting team. And then this gridded rainfall analysis is also quite important to, you know, a number of state agencies, of Irish Water, which manages the water for the whole state. So that's kind of one, I think, nice, neat story from beginning all the way through to end user that I think demonstrates, you know, where we hope to leverage machine learning techniques. And then since we've already mentioned the Accord Consortium of 26 countries, you know, traditionally we would have contributed to all of the fundamental aspects of NWP, from data assimilation right through to forecasting model. But those contributions are also changing as AI advances. You know, everybody's trying to rapidly pivot towards AI. So the relationship of our team with the other 25 countries is also changing, transforming.
That's very interesting. Could I just pick up on the rainfall example that you gave, just so I can understand it better? I guess the idea of quality controlling rainfall data and, you know, producing a interpolated gridded data set is not a new thing. I mean, that has been happening for a long time. So when you say machine learning, is there been some advance in a sense over traditional techniques for doing that?
So I use rainfall as the example, but it's really across the observational spectrum that we'll be applying this process. And the software that we're leaning on was originally developed by our colleagues in Met Norway, so it's known as the Titan software. So that really helps to quality control and quality assure not just the rainfall, but all of the observations we would take into our database. So you're right in a sense in that, you know, it's something that has been done for quite a while, but I suppose the application of this specific software to our observational database is quite innovative for us.
Okay, I mean, perhaps we can move on to the area that has attracted probably the most attention, at least in the weather forecasting business, regarding the role of AI, and that is in weather prediction itself, numerical weather prediction itself. So I suppose a key question, perhaps a fundamental question for us to debate, is how do you see this AI role emerging in the concept of what is now many years of development of the physics-based numerical weather prediction that we've relied on for, well, frankly, for decades. How do you see the interplay there?
Yeah, so obviously there's been huge strides made in a very, very short space of time with regard to the role of AI in weather prediction. I've heard the changes described as the loud revolution in weather forecasting as opposed to the quiet revolution in NWP that you yourself, Alan, have written about. But I think if the question is, will AI completely displace the use of physics-based NWP, I don't think we're at that point or yet anyway. You know, we've obviously seen the very impressive objective verification scores from the likes of the AIFS, ForecastNet and GraphCast and other models as well compared to physics-based NWP. However, something perhaps that isn't being discussed enough at this point in time is the use of these models by the end users and the decision makers, and particularly in an operational forecasting environment. You know, physics-based NWP has built up a lot of hard-earned trust with operational forecasters, you know, through many years of storms, heavy precipitation and snow events. And, you know, if an NWP model misses an event, you can explain due to known model biases, weaknesses or deficiencies in the NWP systems. And the forecasters are also very aware of how these models are constructed and the influence of boundary conditions, etc. And that's kind of one of the advantages of a small Met service like Ireland, is that, you know, we're very close to our forecasters or operational forecasters. We would see them on a day-to-day basis. So there is quite a good communication flow between the two teams. So, you know, in an AI model, those misses or those biases might not be as easily explainable. And I know one of your previous guests, Amy, went into a lot of detail about the explainability of AI. But then on the flip side, some other end users might be not so interested in explainability. You know, some government agency or somebody interested in energy modeling might just care about that it gives a nice output. But I think for a forecaster, relying upon a tool to issue weather warnings, which have quite widespread consequences, that explainability is quite a fundamental issue.
And yet you sort of, at the beginning of that, you used a phrase that attracted my attention, which you said, we will still need physics-based modelling, at least at the moment. And that sort of implied to me that you think there may be a future where we don't need physics in the system. Is that your view, and where is the evidence for that, do you think?
I'm kind of thinking about the example of ensemble prediction systems. You know, ensemble prediction systems are what, almost 30 years old at this point. And I think it was you, Dave, one of the previous episodes mentioned that, you know, there are still people pivoting towards using ensemble prediction systems. So I think there's a little bit of a comparison with this situation and the pivot towards AI. You know, I don't think it's going to be a complete transition from one day to the next. I think it might be a stepwise transition over quite a long period of time. So I think it's quite hard to decide today if at one point in the future we will no longer need physics-based. But on the evidence of today, I still think they definitely have a role for the foreseeable.
If I may, I just very quickly a follow-up, just a sort of question that has been in my mind for some time. Supposing you mentioned actually Matterin is quite active in cloud physics research, in terms of understanding the role of clouds and how they obviously produce rainfall, etc. Supposing there was an advance in the physics, in the knowledge about the way clouds operate in cloud physics, I'm kind of curious, how would that feed into an AI prediction system?
Well, from my understanding, the way that the AI models are trained, you know, let's take the AIFS as the example. It was trained on ERA 5, but it's updated daily using the analysis from the IFS. So if those updates to the cloud physics are part of that analysis that's fed into the AIFS every day, one would hope and one would expect that the AIFS would be able to lean on those advances and those new learnings that are part of the analysis. And then, you know, nudge forward with those new learnings.
Of course, those analyses require, as you say, a physics-based model, because the data assimilation and the new cloud physics will be only in the physics-based model. So, in a sense, it's a kind of integrated hybrid system, I guess.
Yeah, I think hybrid is the key word, and you know that it started off a couple of years ago where people looked at using machine learning to try and emulate some of, let's say, the parameterizations within the physics-based NWP, and that is still an active area of research. So I think it's hybrid the whole way across the spectrum. You know, it relies upon the analysis at the beginning, but also within the model itself there might be some components that are quite compute heavy. I just pick an example, perhaps the radiation code, you know, is very, very compute heavy. Perhaps, you know, that may one day be emulated by machine learning and could help the NWP model speed up its compute time.
It's interesting because in a sense, I think we've cracked one of the things, and that is that we're going to always have parallel systems. I mean, maybe the physics base will be the research tool that is basically feeding in somewhere into the system where there's unknowns. And I think the issue about the radiation is interesting because it is very well understood. And then you can imagine that, and you really can't imagine cloud physics being static. I mean, it is an evolving, and will, since we've never managed to solve the problem, it's going to be evolving for a very long time. If I can, to go on to basically, we talked in previous episode of the Weather Pod about the development of the ECMWS AIFS system, and you've mentioned that today. And it uses the tools of deep learning neural networks to speed up computation of the global predictions. So as a member of ECMWF, how How is your work connected and integrated with the ECMWF in this area?
Yeah, so obviously we have very strong links with ECMWF across a broad spectrum of areas. With relation to AI, we have a number of scientists participating in the ECMWF pilot project for AI, for a data-driven LAM. So this is a collaboration. I think it's 16 ECMWF member states looking to, you know, foster European collaboration on machine learning for weather forecasting across the whole forecasting chain. So as part of this collaboration, there are links with the AI team at ECMWF with the goal of developing a data-driven LAM for Ireland. So this LAM is based on the neural LAM code, so it's developed within the community. And it's like AIFS, it's a graph neural network-based system. And there's a lot of other med services contributing to this, obviously, DMI, Meteo, Swiss, SMHI, just to mention a few. And then our scientists are looking to lean on, as I mentioned earlier, our regional reanalysis data set then to do the training. So then also, and you had one of your previous guests, Irina Sandhu, talk about this in great detail. We're also participating in the Destination Earth initiative. So we participate in the development of the on-demand extremes module and also contributing to the ensemble prediction system elements of the on-demand extremes. But perhaps more fundamentally, and going back a little bit to our previous discussion on the last question, our forecasters are also providing feedback to the ECMWF on the day-to-day use of AIFS products. So this was something that the ECMWF themselves are very keen on. You know, there's the Meteorological User Forum. So that they requested that we give them feedback as often as is possible. So what we have now in our visualization system is AIFS next to IFS, next to the other suites of NWP models. So our forecasters can get a feeling or get a handle on how it's doing compared to the products they would traditionally use. And then any of the positives or negatives are fed back to ECMWF. And I think this for me is a really key part of that AI transition. You know, it's very important that the end users, forecasters for us in particular, feel comfortable relying on these tools when they're making their day-to-day decisions. And I think that trust and that faith, you know, really has to be part of the whole transitional process.
I think that is such a key point, Alan, about the use by operational meteorologists of these new forecasts, because it's certainly my impression that we've become kind of used to the properties of the numerical weather prediction output. For example, you know, we get almost continuous updating through the forecast. We have time steps that are only a quarter of an hour or something like that for a global model. So we see the evolution of rapidly developing systems, and somehow perhaps we've sort of take that for granted. It's not so obvious to me anyway that the same can be developed for an AI prediction system. So I really feel myself that we need to encourage forecasters to almost codify what kind of requirements they need from numerical weather prediction data, wherever it comes from, actually. And perhaps they need to just go back to basics and think, you know, exactly how do we use that data? What if we didn't have it, certain aspects of it, what impact would it have on our users, etc.? I just wanted to come back to the quiet revolution phrase, actually, which you kindly mentioned. I guess another version of the opposite of quiet is noisy. And I hope we don't go to a noisy revolution where, in a sense, there is lots of different kinds of forecasts coming from different kinds of systems. You mentioned your forecasters with screens with all sorts of products on them, and without necessarily being able to trust any one of them. And I think you mentioned this trust aspect. For me, again, that's really important. So let's hope it is loud rather than noisy. Anyway, enough of me. Let's move on to another topic, which sort of relates to what you're talking to David about. Much of the initial development of the AI work in weather prediction has been done, as we know, in the big tech companies, like Microsoft and Google and others. And of course, also inevitably, academia is getting heavily involved in this area. So perhaps you could just outline for us, how does Metairn sort of work with, or perhaps, you know, whether it works with the big tech companies or the academic community on this, or is this pretty much an in-house activity of development?
So up until now, it's principally been with academia. So back in 2019, Metairn became part of something called the Center for Research Training in Data Science. So a collaboration of a lot of industrial and state agency, industrial partners and state agencies across the country, and three academic institutes. So the University of Maynooth, University of Limerick, and University College Dublin. So they were looking to train really high caliber PhD students in the area of data science, and specifically applying machine learning to a whole spectrum of problems, from criminal justice to healthcare to meteorology even. So we've been very lucky to benefit from that collaboration. So each summer, we get 3 to 4 of these students with us for a number of months to work on various aspects of, you know, the meteorological problems that we're looking to solve with machine learning. And quite impressively, you know, these students who have no understanding of meteorology beforehand are purely machine learning scientists, have been able to work on aspects such as updating the physiography, so the land cover types as they're described in our high-resolution numerical weather prediction model. We had a student who created a 10-meter resolution land cover database using a convolutional neural network. So, you know, that obviously has great benefits for the output from the NWP model. We also had a student looking at using machine learning to interact with social media posts to grasp what the impacts of severe weather are. So, you know, traditional observational networks can only observe what they're supposed to, but there's obviously a lot of important information on social media that we could use as well to get an understanding of severe weather. So the student was developed quite a nice tool, which we now, you know, we went out and procured a professional service that provides us that kind of social media impact observation tool. But I suppose more recently, so we've announced a new 5-year multi-million euro partnership with University College Dublin. So this is specifically to have a focus on AI for weather and climate. So this is kind of our key initiative under the AI umbrella. We're really hoping to harness UCD's knowledge in the area of machine learning to create more tailored services, you know, leading to the personalization of weather services perhaps. So it's going to involve the creation of a new center at University College Dublin, led by a professor of AI for weather and climate. And then we will work with the professor and their team to leverage ML approaches to enhance the things we offer to the citizens of Ireland, and hopefully develop new things weather related that we can offer to the citizens of Ireland. So to give one example, in the early discussions we've had, you know, us Metairn, like other med services, we're transitioning towards an impact-based way of working. So for that, obviously, you need specific impact models. So we've begun discussing developing impact models for, you know, things like trees down or power outages from severe wind events. And obviously that has a direct benefit then to our citizens and to our forecasters. So this new venture is really kind of our main focus in the world of AI and ML.
It's actually, if I may, just it's quite intriguing when, you know, from what you said at the outset of this, that it's machine learning applied to many areas, and this idea of machine learning related to impacts, and you know, you can imagine here that there's less controversy over the value, because you're looking at maybe running your transport network, your traffic light systems, all these kinds of things which benefit from that, but are triggered by the meteorological and weather intelligence you need to drive it. So it's quite interesting that you're going in that direction.
I guess also for that to work well, it's going to crucially depend on the availability of data, digital data, on those other areas like tree fall, like traffic flow, etc. So there's quite a sort of digital transformation that's needed, I guess, to merge meteorological data with these other data sources. Is that, do you see that as a major challenge area, or do you think we cracked that already?
No, I think it's an ongoing challenge, to be honest. So some of the areas, so I we mentioned power outages, that perhaps might be one of the easier doors to push open, because that data is already codified and reported on a daily basis. Something like trees down, again, that'll depend on the local authority or who's recording such data in specific areas. So a bit like other traditional observational data sets, there may be gaps and that data might be a little bit more messy. But when it comes to traffic information, we have a very good relationship with the Transport Infrastructure Ireland, which manages all transport infrastructure, and they've done a lot of work in digitally transforming and making all of their data sets open and easily usable. So I suppose it depends on the impact model or the impact question you're trying to answer. Some will be easier to tackle, I think, than others.
And those data sets really rely, in terms of machine learning, there needs to be a training data set, and that needs to actually have quite a record of past events to train the neural network. And one of my concerns is that there isn't enough training historical data to put into the training data sets. I believe that about meteorology, never mind tree fall and transport, etc. So that there's still quite a lot of challenge there, I think.
Yeah, I think tree fall, to pick up on that one again, is probably the biggest challenge. I don't have full view of how deep and how long the record is there. I would have less concern about the power outages. You know, that's something that has many, many other uses. So I would think the record there is quite long and neat. And also for anything related to traffic or transport, again, I think that the record is quite long and neat. So, you know, really will depend on which impact model we're looking to develop.
Cool. Obviously, embracing artificial intelligence, machine learning, is going to involve really quite substantial organizational changes. I mean, you've outlined so many things that you're doing within MetIron. So what changes do you envisage from an organizational perspective in MetIron as you pivot more towards AI?
Yeah, I think the biggest changes are going to be in our front-facing service divisions. So I've already mentioned our transition towards impact-based way of working. That's putting a lot of extra demand on the forecaster, and is really a transformation of their role. So to help with that, you could imagine that any of their upstream tasks, you know, the basic analysis of NWP output, maybe the creation of some text forecasts, a lot of that we hope will become automated, which will allow them to become more risk analysts or risk communicators, because that's the way things are going and has been driven by WMO projects, etc. I think another, and obviously this one is already underway, is more technical changes. You know, I've mentioned our UWC West collaboration already, but we're already discussing what our next purchase will be together. Will we purchase a traditional high-performance computer? Will we purchase just a stack with GPUs connected to it? Will we have to purchase a hybrid computing infrastructure? They're the types of questions as well, and the types of things that we're going to be thinking about over the next few years. And I think in terms of even the profile of the people, we will look to recruit as an organization. So we're already seeing someone from my background would be what we traditionally recruited, you know, maths, physics or meteorology. But now we're seeing people come through the door who have no knowledge of meteorology and are purely machine learning scientists. And that's likely to be perhaps the biggest change, you know, that a hybrid workforce to perhaps reflect the hybrid environment or the hybrid tools that we're working. There'll be a set of machine learning scientists that will hopefully have an understanding or get an understanding or an appreciation of classical meteorology, and then a set of meteorologists who will, you know, begin to appreciate the advantages and the efficiencies that the machine learning can help them with in their jobs.
When we talk about impacts, we often talk about co-development, co-design, co-production, and meaning co-production with the users of these services. So just to go back, rewind a little to the idea of traffic, because it's sort of maybe easy to understand that you could develop a decision support system with the transport authority, and the roles will be somewhat different. If you're building a decision support system, you want really good weather information fed into that in whatever form it is, and you want the reliability of that, but you also have to depend then on others who are going to bring in their data and actually produce something new together in order to deliver whatever kind of services is. Do you see that as part of the evolution of the organization, that it's sort of, there is this sort of interface, this boundary area where you really need to bring the user community as co-developers rather than the Met Service developing something and then passing it outside the fence, but rather doing this together with the other, with others?
Yeah, 100%. This is something I actually feel quite strongly about, and we touched on it a little bit earlier when we were talking about NWP development. You know, I sometimes, and I'm traditionally an NWP scientist, so I sometimes feel that people who are in development kind of can develop a tool and then say, here you go, end user, please employ this tool to make your decisions. But I think, you know, that needs to be flipped. And a bit, I think it was you, Alan, said it earlier, you know, engage with the end user first, engage with the decision maker, get their list of decisions. You know, I need to make decision A to H, and then line up your tools that you have in order to help them make those decisions. And I think that applies in this situation as well. So if I use the example of our flood forecasting team, they've created a network of, we're calling them severe weather flood liaison managers across the whole country, in every county council across the country, and they meet them on a regular basis. And the objective here is to develop those relationships, like you're talking about, Dave, is to say, you know, is this what you need? We've developed this integrated online cloud computed flooding software. Is that helping you to make your decisions better, or do you need something else? So, absolutely, this is something that I think is fundamental to any of these transitions. You know, we've attempted to make transitions in the meteorological world in the past, and perhaps we haven't paid enough attention to the people who actually use the services. Mm-hmm. So it might be time to flip the envelope and ask them first and then develop.
Can I come in on, I want to make a comment that a miserable manager would make in this part of the conversation, and that is, one version of what you've said, Alan, is that before AI came to us, we had a workforce that developed NWP that interacted with forecasters. We had forecasters and users. Now we've got something else. We've got AI to deal with. We've got to have data scientists. We've got to have AI models. But we're not leaving the physics-based models behind. We've got those as well. And actually, also, we're going to have to interface with all of the users in these different areas like traffic flow. And being a miserable manager, I can hardly fund what we did before, never mind what we do in the future. And now you say to me, I don't only need a supercomputer for my physics model, but I need GPUs for my machine learning model. How am I ever going to cope with that?
I think it's a very fair question. I think part of what will help in that scenario is, to go back to my QC of observations example at the start, as I said, some of that is still done manually. So obviously there's a staff resource dedicated to that. You know, if that is now done using a machine learning approach, that staff resource is freed up. And I think you could apply the same methodology across the whole spectrum of the organization.
But come on, you said you needed the physics model and you need an AI model.
I think there will inevitably have to be some expansion of the workforce, like there are, you know, this just doesn't apply to National Met Services. If we look in the private industry, they have to make this transition and this pivot as well, and they're having to employ people who have, you know, machine learning expertise alongside what they were traditionally good at. Take something in the pharmaceutical industry, for example, you know, they're going to have machine learning scientists alongside their biologists and others. So I think there will inevitably have to be some sort of expansion in the workforce to deal with this increased workload. But also some of the staff within the organization will just be repivoting and, you know, upskilling to be able to deal with the workload.
So always looking for opportunities for new sources of funding. I'm wondering, do you work with the private sector users, so businesses which are need weather intelligence, could utilize weather intelligence more effectively? Do you look at them as a client base at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. So my previous role to this current role was in forecast service management area. So I dealt with a lot of private industry. Obviously, can't name any names, but some of the big tech companies, sporting agencies across the country. Anybody who has a weather related decision to make, it was my job really to reach out and try and interact with them.
So it can address Alan's question a little bit, that there are other sources of revenue can help support this bigger role.
Perhaps. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I guess one of my concerns that it is actually that, and again, Alan, you touched on this, that AI has become such a, quotes, exciting area that actually students will be attracted much more into data science than it is into physics, and we may find an unintended consequence that we're not getting as much supply, if you like, of top level physics graduates who come into meteorology. But obviously we have to work hard to make sure that doesn't happen. Just a final point from me, that you've sort of described this interface with the users, and that's obviously going to be very key. Are the users going to need to change the way that they operate? I mean, the interplay between the user community and yourselves, do they need to be coming on board with some of the machine learning ways of working? Is it going to change the way they interact with you, I suppose, is what I'm trying to get at?
We were just discussing that this week with our communications team. That's already a little bit of a concern that we would have. We've built up a lot of trust over a lot of decades, MedAaron as an organization across the national landscape, and that's something we really, really want to protect. So I see it as our role, really, to go out and interact with those users and perhaps explain what this AI transition means for MedAaron as an organization, be that through social media, be that through nationwide roadshows, explaining what AI means for weather. All of those things, I think, are going to be part of that transition. And again, it all comes back to my kind of ethos of never using the end user or the decision maker behind.
Well, I guess, Alan, that's been a great insight into your work and MedAaron's work in general in this fascinating area of AI, and I'm sure we will want to come back to discuss this further with you, but for the moment, many thanks for our conversation today.
Many thanks, Alan. It's been really a pleasure to speak to you, and I think we do look forward to hearing more and more about what MedAaron is doing in this area. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Dave and Alan. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, that concludes this episode of the WeatherPod. We hope you've enjoyed it. Alan and I will be back next month, and in the meantime, please give us your feedback via email to support@gweforum.org.